Coming up on the My Ag Life Daily News Report, the president of the California Farm Bureau testifies at a U.S. House Ag Conservation and Forestry Subcommittee hearing on conservation. I'm Sabrina Halverson. We have details from the meeting, and we start with opening comments from the committee's ranking member, Congressman Doug LaMalfa from California's District 1.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you, Chair Spanberger, for convening the hearing today and for our panelists that will be speaking with us. The 2018 Farm Bill offered important environmental and resource benefits through USDA's suite of voluntary incentive-based conservation programs. The conservation title provides an estimated $6 billion per year to farmers, ranchers, and forest landowners for the implementation of practices that truly do work. Through these voluntary programs, producers can improve soil health and water quality, better manage their lands, and incorporate innovations like increased energy-efficient farming practices. Our conservation delivery system is a proven model that leverages significant funding as a win-win for both producers and the environmental needs. Because of its effectiveness, NRCS conservation programs have been in the spotlight in recent years and become a staple in ongoing climate discussions. While these programs generate countless on-farm benefits, they also directly result in carbon sequestration. As we continue to dwell on climate-related policy, voluntary conservation does have an important role to continue to play. I think it's very important to recognize the great conservation work farmers and ranchers and foresters are already doing each and every day, and they don't always get credit for what's been done in the past before this became such a hot topic. Despite the calls from some climate alarmists, the U.S. is already making great progress towards meeting carbon reduction goals. The U.S. generates less than 15% of the world's anthropogenic carbon emissions. That number is continuing to decline in the coming decades. Currently, U.S. farm productivity and management practices have increased dramatically over the past 70 years. So, U.S. farm productivity increasing by 287% since 1948, the inputs have remained relatively the same. That means the efficiency is going up, more bang for the buck, more bang for the same amount of carbon. In short, we're producing more food and fiber while using the same amount of resources we did generations ago. Additionally, we need to recognize the considerable resources already provided by the Farm Bill to support voluntary conservation and not rush to unproven approaches that may not actually address the concern being made of climate or consider if it will benefit farmers and ranchers directly. In addition to improving soil health, there are a variety of other existing agricultural practices and technologies that are just as beneficial and must be fully utilized. This includes increasing the deployment of precision agriculture to help reduce over-fertilization and runoff, and adoption of technologies such as anaerobic digesters that convert livestock-generated methane to renewable natural gas. Incorporating new technologies and innovative practices will reduce emissions, improve water and air quality, and provide new revenue for farmers and ranchers in the process. No singular solution will be appropriate to each crop, each cropping system, or region. Opportunities in ag extend beyond soil health and cover crops. What works for corn in Iowa will not necessarily work for wheat out in the West or rice in the Mississippi Delta or rice in Northern California. We need to resist turning the Farm Bill conservation title into the climate title. We cannot allow one natural resource concern to completely overshadow all others. These programs must continue to be voluntary, which means we must offer practices that provide farmers choices. Although forests are not the focus of today's hearing necessarily, they must be part of the conversation. Our forests are natural carbon sinks and hold great potential for reducing emitted carbon and sequestering it. For example, any finished wood product stores carbon indefinitely. By improving forest health and actively managing our forests, we can encourage healthier lands, prevent potential fires and the millions of acres of destruction we see so much of these days, as well as the release of more carbon dioxide than all of California's power. So during a recent House Appropriations Committee hearing, U.S. Forest Service Chief Vicki Christensen mentioned our forests are sequestering 14% of all U.S. carbon emissions. That number could be nearly doubled to 20 to 28% through more reforestation and restoration, greater forest resiliency, and the use of more forest products which store carbon. But we must not be hamstrung from actually getting out there and doing the work. With that in mind, as we talk about climate and reducing carbon dioxide, I believe we must take a hard look at how we manage our forests and how we address the wildfire crisis and the huge costs via budget or to our landscape. 2020 was the most devastating fire year we have on record. That includes especially significant fires in my home state of California. We must do more to prevent small fires from unnecessarily becoming huge mega fires that release enormous amounts of otherwise stored carbon dioxide. Addressing wildfires is a crisis and an emergency we can no longer ignore or continue to kick the can down the road. Thanks again to all of our witnesses for taking the time to come be part of this today, to provide your testimony, and we can have this good conversation. As we consider the many stewardship proposals and ideas before Congress, as this committee starts thinking about the next farm bill, your input will be invaluable from here on out, and it's much appreciated. I yield back. Thank you.
The committee chair is Representative Abigail Spanberger of Virginia. Here are her opening remarks on the hearing.
I am excited to be here today for our first hearing of the Subcommittee on Conservation and Forestry in the 117th Congress, and for the opportunity to work alongside my colleague, Ranking Member Doug LaMalfa, and the rest of the esteemed members of this subcommittee. In addition to increasing farm productivity and profitability, conservation agriculture holds enormous potential in our efforts to combat the climate crisis, both through increased soil carbon sequestration and reduced greenhouse gas emissions. As we look to scale the adoption of conservation practices, there is perhaps no greater tool available than the Farm Bill's conservation programs. Title II programs provide much-needed technical and financial assistance to encourage the adoption of cover crops, reduced and no-till management systems, and prescribed grazing systems, among many other climate-smart practices. As we have seen firsthand, these programs are working well in Central Virginia. Studies show that these programs are effective. Not only do they facilitate greater adoption of conservation practices, but they also make it more likely that farmers will keep implementing these practices in the long term to the benefit of our climate, clean water, and the health of our rural communities. What's more is these investments are paying dividends to farmers' bottom line. When farmers participate in these voluntary conservation programs, they do not only reduce carbon dioxide emissions in the environment by sequestering carbon through healthier soils, but they also improve crop quantity, yield, and profit margins. Put simply, any investment Congress makes in Title II programs are an investment in the long-term economic success of rural America and America's farmers. In recent years, USDA has developed new tools that make it easier than ever to consider climate mitigation benefits during the conservation planning process. And thanks to USDA's publication of the Blue Book, we have technical guidelines and science-based methods to quantify emission sinks in agriculture. And likewise, the development of the Comet Farm online tool has made it possible to assess a farm's carbon footprint and see how alternative voluntary management projects and practices could achieve greenhouse gas emissions, or reductions, excuse me. These tools are exciting ways to maximize climate benefits while also making things easier for farmers. And as these tools are refined, I'm hopeful that they will strengthen conservation programs and maximize the benefits delivered to farmers. In this spirit, I worked across the aisle to introduce the Growing Climate Solutions Act on Earth Day this year. This legislation would create a certification program at the U.S. Department of Agriculture to help solve technical entry barriers that prevent farm and forest landowner participation in carbon credit markets. This bill is almost universally endorsed by national farmer organizations like the American Farm Bureau Federation, the National Farmers Union, while also gaining support from large environmental groups like the Environmental Defense Fund and the National Wildlife Federation, and corporations like McDonald's, Bayer, and Microsoft. This legislation has built a broad coalition because it empowers farmers to continue climate-friendly conservation practices. It helps farmers unlock new revenue streams through private carbon markets, and it empowers the USDA to further develop tools that empower climate-friendly conservation practices. I'm excited to hear from our witnesses today on their experiences utilizing these practices and the role that the Farm Bill's programs play in facilitating their adoption. And while we've made great progress in developing the science and the tools that let us better quantify the climate benefits of conservation, I also hope to hear today if there are areas where further research or support may be needed.
Coming up in segment three, we hear from California Farm Bureau President Jamie Johansson. Our news brief is up next. We'll be right back.
Having problems with nematodes? ProMax is your number one solution. ProMax is a powerful fungicide and nematicide that works to kill and control nematodes and soil-borne disease. ProMax is a powerful and easy-to-use product in your fields. WaterRite Technologies is your source for this powerful solution. Visit WRTAG.com/ProMax for more information. The My Ag Life Daily News Report is brought to you in part by the California Walnut Board.
Your news brief for today from the California Farm Bureau. Productive orchards are being removed in the Central Valley as farmers cope with severe water shortages prompted by drought and water system limitations. One Fresno County farmer says he's pulling out almost 400 acres of almond trees. Federal and state water projects say they will provide little to no irrigation water to many agricultural customers, so farmers must calculate how much food they can grow with their limited supplies. Meanwhile, lack of water will also mean reduced rice production in the Sacramento Valley. This is the time of year when farmers plant rice, but analysts believe acreage will be down about 20% because of water restrictions. In some cases, rice farmers will leave land idle in order to transfer part of their water supply to users in other regions. Although acreage will be down, rice planting has proceeded smoothly due to favorable spring weather. As drought coverage expands nationwide, so do the potential impacts on water resources, crops, and livestock. Rod Bain reports.
Expansion of drought across the country, especially in the western half of the continental U.S., is raising concerns for ag producers in impacted areas. Foremost, according to USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey, is worry in places like the Southwest and Central Basin about available water supplies for irrigation.
One of the problems is that we have seen premature melting of already meager snowpacks in many areas, and that has left very little snow still to melt. What snow that did melt is not always reaching streams and rivers. Some of that is soaking in to already parched soils.
And then there are commodities covered in drought. A category within the U.S. Drought Monitor, which as of the first week of May indicates
there are a number of crops threatened by this expansive drought, and three commodities that really jump out as we move into May, primarily grown across the northern plains. We see durum wheat, 93% of the U.S. production area in drought on May 4th. Also high on that list, sunflower production area, 86% in drought, spring wheat, 82%, and barley at 59%. All of those areas will need appreciable rain during the growing season to help offset the effects of drought that has become well established.
Drought is not as prevalent in the Midwest, although Rippey notes,
we do see at this time 26% of the U.S. corn production area in drought. Much of that, though, in some of the western production areas, 22% of the soybean production area in drought.
Regarding other crops and commodities in drought, per the May 4th U.S. Drought Monitor,
we also see winter wheat 35% in drought, sorghum 33%, cotton 31% in drought. And one of the concerns there is that the really heavily cropped areas of West Texas remain extremely dry. Cattle production areas in drought for the U.S., 36% in drought, and then hay production areas in drought, 33% of the country.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Rabobank says hog prices are sharply higher in many markets worldwide as processors are scrambling to find adequate supplies. Higher disease losses in key growing regions, along with the lagging impact of industry liquidation brought on by COVID-19, have limited available hog supplies. Christine McCracken, the senior analyst for animal protein at Rabobank, says African swine fever has proven harder to manage than initially expected in some regions, slowing herd rebuilding efforts in Asia and shifting trade expectations for the rest of the world. The federal government has introduced a new initiative that's aimed at promoting and expanding voluntary conservation efforts around the country. Stephanie Ho has more.
The Biden-Harris administration has released a new report called America the Beautiful, which outlines a locally led and voluntary nationwide effort to conserve and restore 30% of the nation's lands and waters by 2030.
Those making their living from the land, our farmers, ranchers, and foresters, are bearing the brunt of climate change. While communities across the country are suffering hotter and longer droughts, catastrophic wildfires, and extreme weather events.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack participated in a media call to unveil the new initiative.
From USDA's standpoint, we can use the inherent flexibility of our Farm Bill conservation programs to work with producers, landowners, conservation groups, and states to conserve farm land, ranch land, and forest lands. We recently announced a rather significant expansion of our conservation stewardship program and as well as the conservation reserve program.
The America the Beautiful initiative will focus on six main areas.
First, rewarding the voluntary conservation efforts of ranchers, farmers, and forest owners. Second, partnering with nature-deprived communities to create parks and open spaces.
Third would be supporting tribally-led conservation and restoration priorities, while fourth would be expanding wildlife habitat.
Fifth, increasing access for outdoor recreation. And sixth, creating jobs by investing in restoration and resilience.
Interior Secretary Deb Haaland was also on the media call.
The report we're releasing today has been informed by dozens of listening sessions and feedback from hundreds of local, state, and federal elected officials, scientists, tribal leaders, ranchers, farmers, forest owners, and private landowners, outdoor recreation businesses, conservation organizations, groups focused on equity issues, commercial and recreational fishing companies, hunters and anglers, and so many more.
And what was the main theme?
What we heard in these conversations is a deep appreciation for the land, waters, and wildlife, and a recognition that they are intimately connected to the health of our nation and our economy.
She points to steps her agency has been taking.
This week, for example, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced a proposal to expand hunting and fishing opportunities across 2.1 million acres at 90 national wildlife refuges. This is the largest expansion in recent history.
She adds that expanding access to public lands for outdoor recreation is important
to stimulate the economy and to inspire the next generation of outdoor stewards.
And in another move,
the National Park Service will announce a record $150 million in funding for the Outdoor Recreation Legacy Partnership Program, which helps build parks in underserved communities. This is one way that we can help ensure that all Americans have access to the great outdoors.
The initiative is a 10-year effort.
We look forward to more formal and informal ways to engage people across America to shape and guide the America the Beautiful initiative in the weeks, months, and years to come.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
That is our news brief for today. Coming up next, we hear from California Farm Bureau President Jamie Johansen.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
California Farm Bureau President Jamie Johansen was one of four witnesses at the U.S. House Ag Conservation and Forestry Subcommittee hearing on conservation. Here's the opening statement he gave to the committee.
Thank you, Chairwoman Spanberger, Ranking Member LaMalfa, and members of the subcommittee for the opportunity to appear before you today. I'm Jamie Johansen, President of the California Farm Bureau and a first-generation olive and citrus farmer. California's producers are all too familiar with changing weather conditions. The current U.S. Drought Monitor reports that over 97% of California is experiencing moderate to exceptional drought, impacting over 34 million Californians. We're also focused to have above normal fire potential this year. California's wildfires are very personal to me. Not only as president of an organization who has witnessed countless stories a farmer's loss and frustration, but also because my family has been evacuated three times in the last 4 years due to wildfire. Sadly, there is no wildfire season in California. The risk is now year-round, and it is immense. Last year, the U.S. Forest Service stated in testimony that they would need $2 to $3 billion per year for treatments required to get ahead of hazardous fuel levels on the national forest system. We urge the committee to include both forestry and grazing practices as strategies to restore forest health and rangeland health and increase fire resilience. We also ask that the subcommittee helps to ensure that sufficient disaster assistance programs, such as the Wildfire Hurricane Indemnity Program Plus, are made available to producers. Our producers are at the forefront of investment in agricultural research and adopting practices that improve productivity while enhancing sustainability. Conservation is widespread in California agriculture. Our farmers and ranchers have a proven track record of doing more with less. Practices include water recharge, irrigation efficiency, energy conservation, and investment in farm equipment with cleaner emissions. With so much already happening at the field level, it is important to consider how new federal policies and programs will overlay with existing state climate programs and, most importantly, grower-led initiatives. Title II programs provide producers with additional ability to adopt conservation practices while improving agricultural production. We are appreciative of the improvements made to the conservation title by this committee in the last Farm Bill, including enhanced flexibility of programs to meet producer needs. EQIP is the most utilized program in California, assisting producers with options and achieving greater conservation goals. It's important that any changes made to Title II do not walk back those flexibilities. To help ensure climate benefits are adopted, NRCS could consider prioritizing EQIP contracts that result in emission reductions, increased carbon sequestration, and improved climate resilience. Prioritization would still need to remain flexible for all crop types with sufficient levels of financial and technical assistance. California produces over 400 commodities with various cropping systems and farm sizes. Practices will need to be broad and outcome-based, emphasizing a list of options as opposed to a prescriptive checklist. The nexus between the lack of broadband in many agricultural areas and implementation should also be considered. We also urge the committee to consider adding feed, genetics, and nutrition management as eligible practices within the Conservation Innovation Grant Program to provide additional opportunities for farmers to test the newest technologies and evaluate their impact within their operation. While trials around feed additives and genetics are not explicitly excluded, it is also not clear that they are included. We're also very supportive of the Regional Conservation Partnership Program, which offers producers the opportunity to work collaboratively with NRCS and other conservation partners. We supported the change in the 2018 Farm Bill that reconfigured RCPP as a standalone program. And we are currently an RCPP partner working collaboratively on tri-colored blackbird nesting colonies with many of our dairy farms in the Central Valley. Regardless of programs or practice, financial and technical assistance must be consistent, sustainable and long-term if our expectations of producers are also long-term. We must also consider the indirect pressure this may place on important CCC-funded development program, the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program, as well as livestock and other disaster programs. California Farm Bureau supports producer participation in voluntary climate smart practices that sequester carbon, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and build climate resilience. While many have been incorporating climate smart practices on their operations for years, to further adoption on the on-farm climate smart practices, we must not only compensate early adopters, but also consider the economics of the farm and assist those being expected to do more. Only in working together can we achieve solutions that make agriculture more climate resilient while remaining viable. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify today, and I look forward to your questions.
Congressman Doug LaMalfa of California addressed his first question of the hearing to Johansson.
To my neighbor, Mr. Johansson there, California Farm Bureau, thank you for your testimony today and for your good work. Let me jump right into it here. Now, the conservation programs and the conservation title we've had in the farm bills, they're currently oversubscribed. So there's more farmers applying for them than are really able to utilize it. So how do you think if we're moving into new programs, is this going to take away from the current ones we have in place with EQIP and et cetera? Ought not we prioritize the existing ones that are indeed very well liked and voluntary? I think a key point. So what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the important part of any conservation program, you know, coming out of the USDA is also how does it work with state programs as well to further those federal dollars. We can do that at the state level. You know, we have a healthy soils program here in California that has been successful, administered by the California Department of Food and Agriculture, but also works well with NRCS conservation practice standards. It also is a program, ironically, that uses the Comet Planner, which we're discussing here today as well, to implement. You know, I think also, too, is that we also have programs here in California in terms of equipment replacement for more efficient tractors, irrigation pumps as well. I think it's a good thing that we're overprescribed, but I think we have to figure out how we engage the private market as well, since there are consumer benefits to this, who can also participate, because it's always going to be a level. And that's one of the things, we can have these programs for farmers. And one of the problems we have here in California is the inconsistency of funding. So you start a program, and then the next year, maybe the funding isn't there to do it, so the program can hold. Yeah. So I think it's vitally important that as these programs are overprescribed, and unless we can get more funding for it, that we leverage and prioritize with those states and those farmers who bring in additional dollars.
Well, that'll look like we'll have to either boost funding on the current programs and discover new funding for a new direction, or we're going to see these current programs perhaps be reduced in order to go in a new direction. That's my concern on that. Mr. Johansson, also please, we had some very compelling testimony by our neighbor, great guy, Dave Daly, in the Resources Subcommittee last week on the fire situation, you know, up there in East Butte County, but one that's kind of a microcosm of much fire all around the country. What do you see we should be doing to further prioritize on our forest management? As you mentioned, you know, your own area being evacuated. And then the litigation that seems to bog down, as I kind of alluded to in my opening statement, that bogs down any management or salvage operations need to be done for making forests healthy and good carbon grabbers, so to speak.
Yeah. Dr. Daly, a tragic story. I would encourage everyone to look him up and his story, the generations that he spent up there in the Plumas National Forest. Now will be probably multiple generations before it's returned to normal. But we're seeing that in California, as we saw 4 million acres burned in California. Believe it or not, that is it's a record in the modern time. In the early 1900s, it wasn't unusual for 8 to 9 million acres to burn at a time in California. As we say, California is either underwater or it's on fire. And how do we appropriately deal with these natural disasters? And it's about management. And we have great resources in California. You know, whether it is our soils that produce 400 different commodities or our forests that at one time really fueled rural California, particularly in the Redwood Coast, where I grew up in Humboldt County, working summers at the Pacific Lumber Company. But it's changed. And with any amount of resources that we have, and if we define what a resource is, that which is to be used for economic gain or in time of need, that is what we have in California, a lot of resources. However, we haven't properly managed it. So the opposite of what happens with a resource, we've proven, has become a liability. And the same also goes with the recent drought declaration. So soon after the last emergency drought declaration that we had in California, how do we manage our water as well? As we know, the temperatures are changing. Lake Oroville, Headwaters State Water Project, is 4 miles as a crow flies from my farm, is dependent on snow. And Lake Shasta, which is the Central Valley Project, the federal project, it is dependent on rain for the most part. But we know that the snowpack, which this year we saw 500,000 extra acres disappear because the snow didn't make its way down the mountain. So we have to adapt to either expand our dams in those high runoff periods, or also another important part that we're discovering is groundwater recharge. So, you know, we have to manage our resources better, and also how to return funding and profitability to our forests. Because simply, if the national forests aren't being properly managed, as we've seen in the private forests, it gets overwhelmed with fuel and great destruction happening on private property as well.
Yeah, great point on that at the end there with people around here don't understand why we have the funds like secure rural schools that make up for the forestry that used to cause timber receipts to help keep local schools and local county roads up. That was the impetus for that. So without the forest industry, and instead we get millions of acres of fire with this lack of management.
We hear more from Johansson and Congressman Jim Costa on topics like conservation and carbon right after this sponsor message.
AgriMajor Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, AgriMajor has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, AgriMajor can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Rootpack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today. Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Continuing our coverage of the House Ag Subcommittee hearing, Congressman Jim Costa of California is not a member of the subcommittee, but asked to sit in. He had questions and comments for the panel, including why cover crops may not work for many California farmers. He also talked about reaching small and minority farmers. Here are his remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson for the subcommittee. This is an important hearing that the subcommittee is holding looking at Title II and exploring smart climate change practices, because I believe American agriculture can play and is playing an important role in reducing our carbon footprint and as well as wastewater waste streams. I want to underline a comment that our colleague Congressman Panetta talked about, that really many of you have spoken to, and that is one size doesn't fit all in terms of regional challenges that we face as it relates to our carbon footprint and how we can make efforts. And I'm glad that Dr. Paston, you indicated that cover crops may have good applications in some areas, but certainly where you have drought conditions in the West, especially in California, as we're experiencing extreme drought conditions, cover crop is just not going to work. Kimberly Ratcliffe, you talked about some of the issues that was raised with my previous colleague about programs for small farmers, minority farmers. And my experience over the years has been that NRCS and Farm Services Administration, frankly, don't have the capability to reach out to small farmers. In my area, especially, we have cultural and language barriers that exist. Would you agree that we need to do a better job? And I've said that to the current Secretary of Agriculture in making these efforts with the USDA more user-friendly.
I absolutely agree. I think one of the major issues is the locations of a lot of the USDA office. They're so distant from a lot of producers that it's pretty much hard to participate in the program. If you have to drive an hour and a half just to see someone within a USDA office, it's going to be hard for someone to get off a ranch or a farm that are out there every day to go visit a USDA office. So many USDA offices were shut down. So that's one thing. We need to open up all these USDA offices back up in regions that will assist more burden trips. The other thing I think that is key that can actually help USDA is partnership. I'm going to go back to the 100 ranchers. We have private and university partnership and USDA partnership. All of us help get out the USDA requirements. All of us help fill out documentations for producers. If there's more ways for us to partner with private institutions, I think that will be a tremendous help.
And I would agree with you. My time's expiring, but I think the public-private partnerships are essential, as well as with our colleges, universities, land-grant universities, and I'm attempting in California to do just that. Johansson, you are doing a terrific job as the president of California Farm Bureau and your leadership nationwide. I've got limited time, but you talked importance of Title II programs, EQIP. I think we're going to get broadband expanded nationwide as one of the good things that come out of this horrific pandemic. But I'd like you to talk about the efforts that we've had in California in terms of federal conservation programs to complement California's efforts. Do they work together? Do we need to make changes as we work on additional strategies to help farmers implement climate smart practices?
Yeah, and certainly I'd mention that EQIP does work, our Healthy Soils program does work well with the EQIP. It is a potential there. The other big program we have, and I know important in the Valley as well, is the Farmer Program, which is the funding agricultural replacement measures for emission reductions farmers. So that is to replace tractors. And so cleaner, more efficient tractors, cleaner engines, cleaner burning engines. It's been a struggle to maintain that funding. Certainly there could be a greater interaction on the federal level along with that program. Another important program, and I think Dr. Pasian had mentioned it, was our SWEET program, first the State Water Efficiency and Enhancement Program that we have going on in California that has been successful in conserving, over around 130,000 acres now annually as we bring in water efficiencies. So, if we can use these state programs and the federal program just to build on each other and expand, there's a lot of opportunity out there.
My time's expiring, Jamie, but you're doing a terrific job. But on the soliciting solutions, I've worked with Karen Ross, our ag secretary in California, about the reviews that they've done to assess California's success. I want to talk to you further about how we implement that in terms of a nationwide effort and your thoughts and ideas. I don't know if you care to comment or if we have any. I have no time left, but it's an important effort, I think.
Always happy to visit, Congressman. And all too often it feels like California kind of, we've been down this before, so happy to share our experiences, whether that is a success or even just the burden of, a new program sometimes. As farmers, we get a lot of programs that start out as carrots and can end up as a stick down the road. And, we have to remember that like the climate, it can change and so can conditions on the farm in terms of what works and what doesn't work based on that condition.
Long-term funding commitments are critical.
That is our show for today. For tomorrow's program, we are reporting on the president's tax proposals and pushback from agricultural groups. That's coming up Friday. As always, if there's a topic you'd like to hear about, send me an email to sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson from the JCS Marketing Crew. Thanks for listening.